Hi, this is Jay Lynn, a.k.a. The Kingfish, from the upcoming Meta Mediocrity podcast found at metamediocrity.com, and you're listening to episode 33 of Murder at Avedon Hill with P.G. Holyfield, and me as Constable Tanner.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Hi, everybody. This is P.G. Holyfield, and thanks for coming back to Murder at Avedon Hill. This is episode 33. First of all, thanks to everyone for the positive response for episode 32. I did redo a couple of lines of dialogue with less echo for those that had issues understanding what was being said in the cave, and I'll re-upload episode 32 when I get a chance. And so if anybody did have problems and wanted to re-listen to that, I'll post on the website when I'm reposting 32. So there's that. Stay tuned for the end of this episode for some listener feedback and for probably the Damn You Holyfield that will pretty much be tough to beat. Thanks to those who nominated Murder at Avedon Hill over at the People's Choice Podcast Awards site. Nominations are closed right now, and later this month we'll see if Murder at Avedon Hill makes the shortlist for the categories Best Production and People's Choice. This week we have a story so far from author Michael Spence, longtime supporter of the podcast. Michael right now actually is helping me develop two new promos for the podcast. Now that we've reached the stretch run, I'm hoping you can spread the word even more about Murder at Avedon Hill. It sure'd be nice to see the numbers keep going up as we near the climax of the novel. On that note, we have a treat for you this episode. Well, at least it's a big treat for me. One of my podcasting heroes, J.C. Hutchins, makes his cameo this week. Be sure not to blink or get distracted listening, because you might just miss it. I think I'm going to have a little bit of fun at the end of this episode, too. I'm going to add a few bloopers at the end, just to give you just a brief look, just an idea of the trouble I go through every week, 2 weeks, putting out each of these episodes. So be sure to stick around for the end of the episode for that. Okay, that's all for now. A short chapter this week, and then some feedback at the end of the episode. Enjoy.
Greetings, Avedonians and Cairnbairns. This is Michael Spence, the voice of interstellar secret agent Carol Doran in Star Wars, codenamed Starkeeper, and web columnist currently writing about the podcast Repertory Theater at www.michaelspence.us. Welcome to Murder at Bless you, Holyfield. Here is the story so far. In the 2 days they spent investigating the murder of Greta Platt, Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertee have managed to rule out several of Avedon Hill's townspeople as suspects. But their sights turn to the innkeeper, Talik Boar, once Aramis discovers that Talik had motive and possibly the opportunity to kill Greta. In episode 32, Aramis and Aaron confirm that a doorway in the basement of Talik's inn opens onto the system of tunnels underneath the village. They immediately set out, hot on his trail. They catch up to Talik in a large cavern east of town, only to watch in horror as the innkeeper is slaughtered by Rondellus Marx, the same man that Talik has been trying to bring into Avedon Hill for weeks. What's more, Rondellus turns out to be the moon beast that attacked and wounded Aramis 2 days ago. Aramis and Aaron hold off several wolves while looking for an escape, but slowly lose hope as wolf after wolf continues to enter the cavern. Now our heroes are surrounded, by wolves and the vicious moon beast that leads them. Here is episode 33 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 33, Ursula's Lament. The icon of Ursula, child of nature. Ursula, will you never learn?
Tuppen, one day I will tear your throat out and feast upon your blood. I love you too, sister. The Return of the Children.
Aaron attempted to ignore the growls, but soon felt a tentative nip at his heels. At least one of the wolves had circled around behind him. Aaron figured the next snap of jaws would be an attempt to take him down to the ground. Now surrounded, Aaron began to panic. Then, in the time it would take a falling leaf to make a single revolution on its travels from branch to earth, the moon beast's eyes shot to its left, towards where Aaron had left Aramis Cragan. A flash of light Aaron refused to acknowledge had all too briefly distracted Rondellis. At that same moment, a thought fired through Aaron's mind, an image from his first dreamwalk that had belonged to another actor. I have to chance it. Aaron reversed his sword, stabbing blindly behind him. The point of his blade entered flesh and brought forth a howl from one of the wolves closest to him. Aaron turned his back on the moon beast to see three more wolves between him and the nearest egress. Rondellis, believing Aaron was attempting an escape, lunged forward. But instead of retreating, Aaron dodged to his right, using his momentum to climb the cavern wall, the same wall Rondellis had tossed him into a short time before. The rough wall had deep ridges that had once housed glow rocks. The ridges acted as a natural springboard, allowing Aaron to plant his feet and gather himself. Aaron then flipped once more to his right, pushing himself up and away from the wall, directly into the path of the confused moon beast. Having realized that he had misread Aaron's intentions, Rondellis had already begun to use his paws to slow his forward momentum. But the great beast's paws slid just as they had for the wolves on the opposite side of the cavern. Aaron fell upon Rondellis. Wildfire entered the moon beast at the top of the shoulder. Aaron's weight forced the sword through the giant, stopping only as the hilt struck flesh and bone. The point of the blade burst through the belly of the monster, and both man and beast crashed to the ground. The moon beast's momentum pushed them both along the floor of the cave. They slid forward until they reached the three wolves waiting to tear Aaron apart. Aramis knew without looking that Rondellis had been killed.
This had better work.
Aramis still held his advisor's medallion high above his head, flooding his immediate area with light. It had distracted Rondellis just enough. The monk knew full well, however, that the medallion offered him no protection from the wolves before him. Rondellis had prevented the wolves from attacking him for a time, but now Rondellis was gone. Aramis still felt the vestiges of the communal mind link that Rondellis had shared with him, the same link that Rondellis had used to call his pack. It was a link that Aramis could not have established himself, but the monk hoped he could still use the fading connection to communicate with the wolves. Aramis understood that he couldn't speak to the wolves. He had to use the same language that had nearly overwhelmed him only a short time before.
Blue-gray night sky. The feeling of rushing over a forest floor at a speed few horses could match. low to the ground, darting around trees as if they were grass. Freedom! For a moment, Aramis lost his focus, having no idea how to communicate the idea of freedom. The growling of the wolves filled his ears. The largest wolf in the cave moved forward. It snapped its jaws at the monk's wrist, causing him to pull his medallion down to his chest. But Aramis did not stop. He raised his eyes until they met the yellowed gaze of the wolf before him. Aramis opened his mind as much as possible, trying to draw the wolf in. Staring into the eyes of the wolf triggered a memory in the monk's mind. Aramis smiled. A moment later, Aramis dropped his advisor's medallion to the ground and spread his arms apart, accepting the will of the wolf before him. Aaron stood over Rondellus Marx. The moon beast had reverted back to his human form as Aaron had pushed himself to his feet. Aaron couldn't focus on this metamorphosis, however, as he was too busy staring at the three wolves that for some unknown reason had still not attacked him. Even though he should have pulled wildfire from Rondellus' corpse, he found he could only stand and watch the sight before him. The wolf pack had slowly ceased its growling. All, including the three nearest to Aaron, stared at the dark wolf next to Aramis Cragan. This large wolf barked once. It tilted its head to the side, as some of the wolves had done during their battle. After what seemed an eternity, every wolf in the cave, and several that had remained just outside three of the entrances to the cavern, moved towards the large wolf. In moments, they formed a large circle around the monk. The prince's mouth fell open as the large wolf shook its head twice more, bowed its head until its nose touched the ground, and then rose to lead the entire pack to the edge of the cavern. Most of the wolves focused on Rondellus' corpse. The new pack leader, however, went down on all fours and simply stared at Aramis. Aramis held himself up with one hand. Aaron had by that time moved to Aramis's side. Aramis looked up at Aaron and attempted a smile before slumping to the ground unconscious. "How did you do it?" Aaron asked as the monk climbed into his bed. Aramis had been able to lead them back to Avedon Hill after Aaron had tended to the wound on Aramis's shoulder. Aaron had carried the corpse of Talik Bor over his own shoulder, the body wrapped in a blanket from Aaron's pack. It was the middle of the night when they made it back to the cellar of the inn. Aramis woke Lila and sent her to the nearby garrison to get Head Constable Lewis. Aramis did not share the news of Talik's death until she returned with the constable. She fled the inn in tears.
Lewis sent Constable Tanner to accompany Lila and make sure she made it home safely.
Aramis then detailed the events as they had occurred, leaving out only the part that the glow rocks played in Talik's last moments. Aramis also glossed over Aaron's hand in the killing of Rondellus Marx. Lewis listened and shook his head from time to time, amazed at the description of the moon beast. It was obvious that the head constable had questions, but Aramis quickly ended his statement with a request for Lewis to take the information to Lord Avedon on his behalf, and a promise to meet with him in the morning to discuss matters further. Before leaving, Lewis confirmed that Father Joris had not returned to town. Aramis left Lewis with one final message. "These events confirm that someone other than a resident of Avedon Hill could have murdered Greta Platt. Make sure Lord Avedon understands that Avedon Hill is not as secure as he has led us to believe." Finally alone, Aramis took time to answer Aaron's questions.
"How did I do what?
How did you make the wolves? Let us go." Aramis sat in his bed with his eyes closed.
"Before Rondellus and I fought, Rondellus practically invited me to enter his pack mind. This allowed me to understand how he and the wolves communicated. It is a language made up of emotions and mental images. Rondellis used this link to control the wolves.
So this language prevented the wolves from attacking you while I fought Rondellis?
No, it was Rondellis that kept the wolves from attacking me.
Aramis opened one eye.
By the way, excellent work dispatching Rondellis. Your father would be very proud.
Actually, Mother might be even more proud. I used something I saw in my first dream walk to kill Rondellis.
Aramis opened both eyes at that statement.
Remind me to ask you about that later.
Why did Rondellis do that? Prevent the wolves from attacking you?
I believe he either wanted the pleasure of killing me himself, or of forcing me to join his pack as another moon beast.
Realization washed over Aaron's face.
After you dispatched Rondellis, there was no reason for the wolves to hold back. I communicated with the wolves as best I could, tried to explain that they were now free, and that they had no quarrel with you or me.
Aramis stretched his shoulder and continued.
It did not work at first, but then I remembered Ursula's lament.
Ursula, the child of nature.
Aramis nodded.
Yes. You know the story.
Aramis knew the answer before he finished asking the question. Ursula's lament was one of the more ancient legends of Ursula and would not have been part of Aaron's formal education.
If there is any one trait that Ursula has exhibited throughout her existence on Cairn, it is that she is often born as an animal, or at least discovers early on the ability to change from human to animal form at will. One such avatar lived many generations ago in what is now Inara. Ursula's avatar was a wolf, female. The legend states that Ursula, living as this wolf and not understanding her true nature as a child of Aj, came under the spell of a magnificent beast, a great wolf with powers that she did not understand. Ursula followed her mate without question, creating a wolf pack called the Ra-Garl-Im. Ra-Garl, Ursula's lover, drove his pack until it controlled the Danmar Wood, one of the great forests of the north. The pack grew larger and more powerful over the years, eventually depleting their food sources in the Danmar Wood. Without food, Ra-Garl ordered what had become a wolf nation to attack the great dwarven city of Korinhold. Unknown to Ursula and the rest of the wolves, Ra-Garl was a moon beast, and against Ursula's wishes, the beast led an attack of over 1,000 wolves on Korinhold. The dwarves were surprised by the attack, but after a terrible night of battle, the wolves were repelled. Broken and bloodied, Ursula and the remaining members of the pack made their way back to their forest home. But none realized that the dwarves had no intention of allowing the wolf nation to rebuild. Every able dwarf from Korinhold entered the Danmar Wood, fully prepared to slaughter every wolf they found. While this happened, the moonbeast pulled Ursula aside and changed before her eyes, becoming a dwarf with green, glowing eyes. The dwarf laughed and called her by her true name.
Ursula, you care too much for these creatures. They are our playthings, and they always will be.
It was Dobbin, wasn't it?
Yes, one of the many examples of the child of trickery taking great pleasure in causing another child to receive his or her epiphany. All Ursula wanted was to live her life, helping animals and to support the cycle of nature. Dobbin must have recognized this and refused to allow Ursula's happiness to continue. As Ursula began to comprehend her divine nature, the dwarves of Korinhold began their attack. And though Ursula understood it had been her brother, Dobbin, that had orchestrated events, she could not allow her wolf brothers and sisters to be destroyed. She fought back with the innate powers unleashed by her epiphany, killing thousands before the dwarves were forced to retreat to Korinhold. That night, Ursula wept over the destruction she had caused. During this time of grief, she communicated to the wolves what had happened, using her powerful emotions to explain that Ra-Garl was a moon beast that had tricked them all, had controlled them with powers that went against nature.
Ursula's lament was what I tried to convey to those wolves in the mountain tonight. Certainly Rondellus was no Dobbin, but still, he controlled them like no pack leader should. I shared the images and emotions of what might have occurred that night so many years ago, showed them the destruction of the only true wolf nation because of the evil nature of one moonbeast. Wait a moment. It's not like you were there that night. That story is a legend. For all we know, that event never even occurred. How could you share images from a legend such as that? Aramis's voice was quiet, almost as if he spoke from just beyond the veil of sleep. My belief in Ursula and all the children of Aj provided me all that I required. The wolves filled in the gaps. I was counting on something that I felt rather than knew for a fact. Every wolf has the history of Cairn, at least from their point of view, imprinted in their communal mind. Think of it as an oral history that has been passed down from generation to generation for thousands of years. Once the Alpha Wolf recognized the events I described, the heart-wrenching and unnecessary loss of life that night so long ago, he convinced the rest of the pack that they should let us go. It looked like they were exacting their revenge on behalf of Ursula as we were leaving the cavern. I don't think there's much left of Rondellus. Aramis was already snoring. Aaron sat down in a nearby chair and began his watch. He sighed and softly whispered, "I guess the carnival is not coming to town." So like I said before, we got promo, and then we've got some Cairn line calls, and then some bloopers at the end. Enjoy.
You ever read comic books? I don't. I mean, what's the point with all the capes we have flying around these days? Every hero worth his salt has a cool origin story, right? Well, that's a load of crap. Maybe it happens sometimes to those headline heroes, but not the metahumans I know. Most of us feel like we were gang raped by a cosmic freight train with a twisted sense of humor. Welcome to Meta Mediocrity, an audio comic book written and read by Jay Lynn. Join us for our full podcast at metamediocrity.com, where you'll find lively discussion on a wide range of topics along with regular episodes of this audio comic.
Damn you, Holyfield. You give me this wonderful episode, you put all these awesome sounds in, you make it really great, and then you cliffhanger me. Thanks a lot. Actually, I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it so much that I actually called your voicemail line, which I don't normally do, so there you go. My name is Shara. I think I've left comments before. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to the conclusion, and I hope there's more planned. Have a great day. Bye.
Holyfield. Hey, this is Scott Roche of ArchangelNovel.com and SpiritualTramp.com. And while I cannot join in the meme because tender ears are listening, I can say that you continue to blow me away with your podcast novel. And I really enjoy the production values that you're putting in. But beyond that, it's just a really solid story. You know, I've said this before when I interviewed you, I think, and also just in emails and stuff. I just love the whole concept behind Murdered Abaddon Hill, and I love the world, and I love the characters, and I don't want to gush or go on over long, but keep up the good work. I really look forward to the climax, and I really, really look forward to whatever you've got coming down the pipe next. So, and by the way, also enjoyed the roast. I said as much on Twitter, but I figured I'd say it here as well. So, keep up the good work, and we'll see you on Twitter. Bye.
Just want to jump in here, and Scott Roche is actually talking about the roast that I put together with the help of some great podcasters for Team Morris and Pip Ballantyne.
It was originally supposed to be played at Pip and T's book party at Dragon Con, and due to the number of people at the party early on, it was too loud to play the roast. It's an audio roast that was about 17 minutes, and T put it into his feed, the Moravi feed, and the Billabub Battings feed, I believe. So if you want to go over there, I'll put the link in the show notes, and you can listen to that.
Mr. Holyfield, this is Adam Teese. Just want to say this last episode was really great. I liked all the effects and the music in the background and stuff. It was subtle, but I think it really added a lot. As far as the cliffhanger ending, damn you, Holyfield. Damn you.
Damn you, Holyfield.
My little boy used to have such perfect language until this silly meme started. Damn you, Holyfield.
Damn you, Holyfield.
Hey, PG, it's Conundrum calling. Well and truly cliffhangered. Dobbin's bag of tricks, man, you pulled it off. Well done, all the way around. From the bottom of my heart, and with respect, damn you, Holyfield.
Bye. Hey, FEG, this is Andy calling from Milwaukee. And first, damn you for that incredible cliffhanger. I guess we'll just have to be biting my nails till the next episode. Hopefully you can get it out soon. And on that note, I wanted to say that the all the effort you put into episode 32 with all those sound effects was 100% worth it. Hell, 200%. It sounded awesome. Loved all the little sounds. So great job and keep up the good work, man. Bye-bye.
Damn you, Holyfield. As requested.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this podcast and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com, Kevin McLeod through incompetech.com, and David Beard through davidbeardmusic.com. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review at iTunes and on patiobooks.com, and become part of the show by leaving a message on the Karen line at 704-315-5884. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008 P.G. Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.5 U.S. license. Rondellis had prevented the wolves from attacking him. Rondellis had prevented the wolves from attacking him for a time, but now Rondellis was gone. That would be my cell phone. Then, in the time it would take a falling leaf to make a single revolution. Then, in the time it would take a falling leaf to make a single revolution on its travels from branch to earth. Then, in the time... Please don't do this Aaron couldn't focus on this What began as a lunge at the huge man Huge. Bone-sharpened knives. What the hell does that mean? Bone-sharpened knives. That's possibly the worst phrase I've ever written. In earlier meetings, Brianna had shown herself to be less assertive than her counterpart. Can't remember her name.
Well, golly gee, everybody. Ursula, you just care too much about these darn creatures. They're our playthings, dosh garnet, and they always will be.